Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. Live. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, June 16th. Already, my name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. Glad to be here, as always.
As always, glad to have you. Welcome to those joining us live, as well as to those listening to the archives. We appreciate you being able to catch up with us. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org. and tfuniversity.org. Now, we're going to begin with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. Alright, so tonight, you know, last week, if you listened, you heard that we were going to have the most provocative, the most epic conversation to be ever broadcast in either audio or video format in the last century. And we are. We're going to have an excellent discussion because we're going to talk about the truth. We're going to talk about the divine. And of course, by that, I mean our one true God, Baby Yoda. So
you do crack me up, Michael. It's a great way to start the program.
But we are going to be talking about divine energy.
We are. And, you know, of course, I have my interpretation of what that means. I did a little checking online, and because that's where people go now for everything, is to Google, of course. And
Google doesn't say it's not real.
That's right. So It kind of went along with what I thought. It's really a biblical term, mm-hmm. and with reference to God. So feeling that divine energy is that God-like energy. Now, I dispute that because everything tends to reference God when I reference a universal energy, which mm-hmm. some people call God. So it's kind of an iffy topic because it's right on that edge of
gray area, for sure.
Yeah, it's arguable.
And that was even one of the questions I had. Just thinking about what is the divine and how can you define that concept without a classical kind of dogmatic God? And you alluded to it and you spoke to it when you said that. We do it by kind of reframing what is God, or what do they mean by that when they kind of have that original concept.
Well, it's aliens. I thought everybody knew that.
Well, I mean, sure, right? I mean, even I think we've said this before, right? Even in the simplest terms, God is, of course, extraterrestrial. was not born of this planet, so obviously he's an alien, interdimensional if you really think about it. But
sidebar, there is a yogi on, I had him on YouTube the other day, and I can't for the life of me remember him. I'm not going to look right now, but he does reference aliens as the gods. And
well,
he's...
Well, then what god created the aliens? So...
Well, Michael, yeah, you had to go and confuse everything.
Well, I don't believe in one broad kind of, overarching god, but...
I know, but see, that's the thing, right? It's what is that god to you? What is god to you? What is that force of energy? And to me, simply, it's, as a metaphysician, and I've thought this most of my life, it's just that energy, that force that binds us all. That's what I reference as God, not as a singular being or an alien, although, I mean, we could all buy into the theory, and it's entirely possible that we're hybrids of many alien species, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But referencing back to what divine is, what that divine experience is, it's that feeling you get, I suppose, when you have a euphoric moment, like a spiritual moment, or that's what I think of it as, that aha, that's kind of a divine experience where you feel really connected to that source, whatever that source is.
Yeah.
So we just had the discussion. We don't have to talk about it anymore, Michael.
Well, the way I kind of would classify it too is also, what is that spark that gives life its power, its energy, its meaning? Why, if you even look at evolution in a materialistic sense of, they're simply nothing but the things that we can see, feel, and measure. What is it that drives evolution? Why does life want to exist so badly in the first place? What drives it to propagate? What is that force that drives life to continue to live, to expand, to create, to exist? What is the drive to exist?
Well, and that is the mystery. That's the ultimate mystery, I think, that the time immemorial, so to speak, that... we seek those kinds of answers. We're curious. We want to know, where did we come from? What keeps us together? Where are we going? What's the purpose of life? And it all kind of revolves around that whole discussion. And I think when what connects us, I'm going to reference back to the nine principles, principles of belief. And I think that there's something divine in all those points connecting together. To me, it's not each just in and of itself an essence of a divine kind of expression, but you put them all together and that is a divine collective. That's kind of how I am drawing a parallel. But again, we're back to the ultimate question of what does divine mean? Because I can tell you, oh, you look divine today. Does that mean you look godly? Or you look wonderful? That divine experience of, having it like a moment of euphoria? Or is it, just simply readers who claim to connect with the divine energy? That's why I don't use that term. It's kind of a foreign word to me, which is a good discussion because I have to explain why I don't use it, because I don't like to separate myself in saying I connect to a divine energy, because it implies to me that you aren't. You see?
And words are so difficult because you take an abstract thought, a thought that is formless, and you try to define it by verbal language. And what divine means to one person means it's something entirely different to another.
Yeah.
And there is a certain poetic nature when you say, everything is touched by a, bit of the divine. It has a kind of poetic feel to it. But really, we evolve. Our words evolve. The meanings of the words evolve. And the way that we perceive the world evolves. And I think we're getting to a point where we realize that, when we speak to the divine, we don't mean specifically to one of the Abrahamic gods or one of the, polytheistic gods or you know, even the Hindu beliefs. One thing that I love about Buddhism is that there are no creator gods. I think that they get points for that. Yes, they do have gods, but their gods are just powerful beings that are mortal. They live for maybe hundreds of thousands of years, but they will still end, which is a interesting concept. The fact that everything comes to an end in that, you know, Eastern Buddhist philosophy, even the gods.
Well, and that would be a divine experience then. You know, yeah. Or considered to be a divine experience. You know, there's some chat going on in the chat room, and, you know, everything from multiple senses, Dr. Stephen is saying, in the use of the word that requires identification to the listener. And that's absolutely true, because mm-hmm. when we use words and they have so many different meanings, we have to explain ourselves.
Oh, yeah. You know, the contextual meaning of what that word meant to those people at the time, especially when you look at something that is as massively influential as the, you know, Christian Bible, the Old and New Testament. It has been translated and retranslated. And then even if you get to the root meaning of that word, what did that word mean to those people 2,500 years ago and how they were interpreting things? So much gets lost in translation. It's hard to even reliably know what historians or, you know, more mythic stories are. It's you have to really get to the context.
Well, I'm with you. I think, and that's why when we're using language and describing what we want to say, the simpler is better.
Right.
You know, it's not to go off on a tangent with big words or, you know, esoteric words kind of thing, unless you really know you're a scientist and that's what you use. I mean,
right.
To me, that would be whoa.
Or you know? Unless you just want to sound like a smarty pants and, you know, make yourself
exactly.
feel good.
I've been there. You know, there's a time in my life I was young and I wanted to be, I was reading the dictionary. I even had one of those think tanks, you know, and you spin it and then a word would come up in the window. Every day I'd read a new word, right? And like I really wanted to expand my whole, I don't know, just the use of language and how I spoke with people. And, you know, the older I got, I went, man, this is, like, not working. Simple is better.
Yeah,
simple,
true enough.
Keeping it simple. We got way too many words. English is way too messed up. Oh. And English.
Not even just English.
Yeah, but English is a compilation of all these many languages, and it keeps breathing and making stuff up.
This is true. But wouldn't you also acknowledge that there seems to be a huge adaptability? I mean, English is not any one real language per se. It's German mixed with French, mixed with Old English from the Britons, mixed with a touch of Latin, mixed with indigenous languages of, you know, places that they've come in contact with.
But Michael, I'm going to stop you there because I think that English is a made-up language. It's only like less than 1,000 years old.
Well,
and it was, you know, it started with the Romans taking over all of Europe and, you know, taking over this culture and that culture, and they made up words as they went.
Well, I mean, everybody makes up words as they go, but I will say this. I mean, nobody said that a dog is a dog. I mean, somebody made that noise and like, hey. That sounds right for that. We're going to go with it. All right, guys, that's what that's called from now on until they change it. But English is not really one of the romantic languages like French and
Latin.
You know, Latin. You know, of course, Spanish and Italian are the most closely related to Old Latin. They were the vernacular of the time. But language itself is an interesting way to look at cultures and how they evolve and adapt. And English, you know, you had successive waves of invasions. You had the Anglo-Saxons invading first, adding that Germanic touch to the Old English. Then you had the French Normans, and the Normans themselves were Vikings that took land in the north of France and then became...
Hey,
so you have this...
Off. Back off with my Vikings.
hey, nothing wrong with them. And, you know, a little side note, Viking was more of a profession than a people. You know, you had the Danes and the Norwegians, but to be Viking was a profession.
Yep.
We're going to do a broadcast all about Vikings.
Oh, I love it. I love it. But you're right. And this is how we have, you know, adapted words and we keep creating new words. And I got to tell you, most of the time when people are talking, no, I don't understand what that means. And so, and now, of course, we're into this, everything's abbreviated, and I don't know what that means. Yeah. You know, my granddaughter, in this texting thing, her mom said to her, my daughter said, there is no abbreviations allowed. We are going to text in full sentences because I'm not answering anything abbreviated because I don't know what it means. and that's a good thing. But it's, again, we're back to this word. This divine is a huge word, and divine in what sense? But it does allude to some kind of experience that connects us outside of ourselves.
Yeah. And I will also say this, you know, don't let anybody tell you what divine means or get to tell you what the concept of God means, because they have no right. As Dr. Stevens pointed out, even the Bible was a collage of different books that a group of people, just human beings, decided that this collection of books is going to be what it is.
And 400 years after the so-called life of Jesus.
Right.
So.
Well, and, you know, it is interesting how long these things take to really build up. It was, what, 500 years after the death of Siddhartha Buddha that they started writing about him, actually?
Yeah.
Joseph Smith, he came along at a great time. They already had the printing press and newspapers and all kinds of stuff. So Mormonism was off to a start. But
so how we use language is... Like there's a history, and I think even if somebody's not interested in history and interested in this evolution of language, I think each of us is very responsible to ourselves and to the people around us to use it properly. And I tell you, I do have a pet peeve. I'm going to share my pet peeve about the New Age community, which I've had this pet peeve for a long time. But this... holier-than-thou kind of attitude that's very much likened to other religions that started to, I got a, you know, sour taste in my mouth when I started listening to people, self-proclaimed psychic, self-proclaimed, you know, whether it's astrology, palmistry, whatever, that they have this divine connection and that, you know, the spirit sent me and the universe talks to me. And I thought, well, that's good. Everybody does. Well, I'm very psychic. Yeah, everybody is. You know, and that wanting to be that special.
Yeah.
You know, so there's something kind of, you know, a friend of mine said it the other day about young people and kids. There's an innocence that's lost. And I would go so far as to say that we've lost our ability to be a little more humble and modest. You know, that we don't know everything and we're not that special people,
yeah.
You know. And so when we start talking with these biblically hinged words, you know, we're separating ourselves and we're separating our minds. And I think that's where I get kind of, oh, here we go again. You know, that kind of thing. And I appreciate that people are evolving and everybody's on their own trip, but they also don't like, and this is what I mean, being humble and learning, they don't like to be not corrected so much as they don't like input to what they've just said. It's no, divine means this.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
so. Nobody, you know, nobody has a license on it. And the concept does have a lot of baggage. So, you know, when you throw the word around, it means vastly different things to different people based on their level of, well, what different Abrahamic dogmatic thing they're getting into at the time.
So I think a solution might be for if you're going to use those words like divine or God, you know, things, it would be more like divine-like, you know, and kind of hyphenate that into a divine-like experience. And that, it, you know, then it kind of poses a question mark.
Yeah.
Oh, divine-like, what would that be? So that people can interpret it more from a sensory position rather than that intellectualized, oh, I have to go to church on Sunday and know what divine experience is.
And again, a lot of it's just in the eye of the beholder. You know, divine can just be those little moments of pure happiness that pop up through life. You know, those moments where you get to connect with your friends and your family in meaningful and special ways. Those special memories that we form as we make our way through life, and just little bits of happiness touch us with the, you know, something that, you know, the meaning behind it all. The reason we put up with all of the stupid crap day after day. And, you know, you just wait to work through your day. Just, you can get to, you know, go home and watch the new trailer for the second season of Picard that has Q coming back. And you're like, oh, something to look forward to. And that's a bit of the divine in and of itself.
Jamil is kind of correcting me when I said, you know, you're not that special. You're not special, people. And he says, yes, we're special, just like everyone else.
Well, exactly.
Yes,
right.
But we're each in our own. Sorry, go ahead.
Unique.
There we go. Everyone is unique. In their own uniqueness, that's, you know, of course, it's that nature versus nurture kind of thing. And I believe that each of us is born with a very unique nature, but then it's conditioned and nurtured. So it's then what do we make with ourselves? That's my take on it, but not everybody feels in such a way. So again, it's like Dr. Edwards says, divine describes something of having the highest attributes. I like that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I very much agree. It's a wonderful way to put it in a more secular way.
I'd have to back up when I use the word, though. Say, it's very divine, meaning of the highest attributes. but it's true. I like that definition of it. But again, it's everybody would have a different one. I like that one in particular. So I guess we have to be really careful. What is divine, Michael? What is divine to you?
Oh, I can't really put it better than that. To me, what is divine is the energy that spurs life. It's the, you know, connections that we form. It's the connections with, you know, with life that we form. You know, talking about the moments of happiness and joy that we find throughout life, that is divine. That tells us that there's more to life. Something to look forward to. And we don't have to classify it. And I definitely personally do not classify it in the classic dogmatic sense of the divinity of God. You know, no, there is a divinity of life. And you could be a pantheistic person who believes that life, you know, the sum total of all life gives itself to perhaps a God spread out. I've always held the certain, you know, core concepts in terms of my ethics that I will relate back to my, you know, Christian upbringing in some ways. I do believe certain concepts like we are judged by how we treat the least amongst us are very true. I've always felt that to be very applicable to, you know, animals. If you want to know the core of a human and how they are, you know, watch how they treat animals. It's usually a good indicator. Not always, but usually. And to me, you know, the goodness in humanity is divine. So I really couldn't add any more to it myself. What about you?
Nature. And here's a paradox in some way, because I think that, not unlike what you're saying, Michael, I look at nature and I look at this planet as a divine experience. And having said that, in its wonderment, it's violent, you know.
Yes, very much
it's,
so.
As Dr. Kelly always coins the saying of, we live in a planet where everything eats everything. And but there's something divine about that, you know.
The desire to live, the struggle to live. You know, I've often thought about it a number of ways, but in the sense that often you get frustrated. Why do we live in a planet that's so savage? You know, why is everything so harsh? Instead, we could look at the bubble that we live in the Western world with our modern amenities and realize that we have carved out a wondrous existence by any standard of our ancestors. And there's no reason, nobody just said that you get to have a wonderful paradise existence. There's nobody that came out and said that life should be this, that, or the other. We make it what we can. Nature is brutal, but it is also beautiful.
Exactly.
And I am personally, and I don't know if we've ever directly talked about this, Dr. Hunter, but I think I know where you stand. I personally feel that human beings are of nature. You can't say that anything that we do is outside of nature.
I agree.
You know, you could also argue that, you know, human beings have an effect on nature, but yet we are a part of it. But nature is all-encompassing. You know, nature
I think that human beings are the only species to put themselves above nature as well, not recognizing that we are nature and we're a part of it.
But isn't that a natural instinct? Isn't that what the human animal does? Well, and frankly, it's because we can. I mean, and that's the only reason anything that has ever lived has ever done anything, because it can. Nature is putting up boundaries. Nature is the balance between predator and prey. You know, we do things because we can. And we are the human animal. What is being aware is that next level, is understanding the instincts that we have as the human animal and being able to counteract certain biases, can counteract certain instincts that might not be healthy in the long run with our heightened awareness. That's the goal anyway.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that we don't want to often look at this, in other words, this deductive and inductive reasoning. You know, we look at animals as a part of nature, but if one is misbehaving, it must be mad. Therefore, we put it down. And we don't necessarily think the same of ourselves, so we just don't like you. You know, we want to put you down. You know, but we have these many different sets of rules. And I think that's where humanity has kind of gone amiss in divinity. That's the way I see it. And living if a certain kind of divinity when we've created separation and we make up all these, because we're not making sense anymore. I think everybody has to agree. We're human beings who are just not making sense anymore.
I think we're in a transitionary period. You have to really think about it. Not too long ago, we were still very, very violent. I mean, even 150 years ago, 100 years ago, it's been relatively in the modern age where we've just become less likely to, you know, kill one another at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, I'm talking about really simple little things in life, though, Michael. I mean, if this set of rules belongs to these people, why doesn't the same set of rules belong to the other people? Well, how come I treat my friends different than I treat my family? Or, you know, I treat you different than I treat somebody else on the street? We have all these different sets of rules, and we don't make sense, and they've just gotten out of control, in my view. And
well, those rules are tribal. Those are, I think, the basic. They go back to our primal selves. We have the closest family, we have our friends, and we have these concentric circles of trust in our social spheres, which I think leads to certain problems. And I do think that we, you know, Dr. Edward had mentioned that he likes the bubble, but it needs improvement. I agree that in the sense that we do need to improve, because now we are entering a new phase where we are dealing with these intellectual issues in a more meaningful way. Over the last, you know, several hundred years, I think we've been able, through the Enlightenment, able to tackle, you know, some of these core concepts of where do we derive ethics. Is it from the divine, no pun intended, the divine command theory, the idea that it comes from God and what God says is right? We've moved beyond that. And now we are defining what is right and wrong. And we, as a juvenile species, frankly, who are still mired in ignorance, are working our way through trying to feel out what is right and wrong in the, without having a God, you know, to, you know, point to it. And I think that we're coming to a point where we're going to have a secular kind of ethics that is based out of just what is objectively kind of right and wrong, based on every living things right to exist as it should in its environment. And we're going to evolve in that way. And it might take hundreds of years. It might take 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. But that is but a blink of an eye in cosmic time. And well, I am curious. I am excited to see what hopefully humanity has in store in terms of the evolution and maybe even coming closer to that divinity.
But. So you're either going to be a vampire and live that long, be immortal, or you're going to be reincarnated and remember all your lifetimes to know all that in 1,000 years.
Yeah, but don't you have to attain enlightenment to remember all your past lifetimes? That sounds like so much work. Gosh, is it even worth it? I'll just take the repeats, you know. Nirvana is such a, oof, that's a grind.
You know, as much as I would like to, I know that this lifetime is not going to be my attaining great enlightenment, I'm afraid.
So. Well, I mean, we haven't, and apparently until you reach that nirvana, we have an infinite number of lifetimes, so, hey, you know.
Yeah, well, enjoy, you know, but this is the one we're living, and this is the one we've got, and this is the one we're responsible for, and I know that you know that, I'm just saying that to live your best life is in that here now, and that to me is divine.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
what it's a divine experience that we're living. Now, is it hard? Is it challenging? Does it suck some days?
Oh, God,
you bet.
Yeah. Oof, bad.
But there's sometimes, like if we just, in every day, you know, I know somebody had mentioned, I think last week, about, you know, what my key thing is, nature, and in the chat room. And that's true. I go for a walk every day with a friend of mine, and I make it a point of looking around and saying, whew, I live here. This is awesome. And then I think about, if I was a tourist looking at this for the first time, you know, so, oh, and then I see something I haven't seen before. And to me, that's a divine experience. You know, that's,
oh, yeah.
Even though I wouldn't use that word to describe it, I just see the wonderment of it and trying and working on it that it's not an effort. It's just a conscious discipline to remember every day that there's something extraordinary here. Like this is an extraordinary experience. Now,
yeah.
The divine energy that binds us all, okay.
It's called the force. Go on.
Yeah, the force. I'm with you on that one. You know, that universal connection. I love that. And that's kind of where I go. And that's what we have to remind ourselves and do our best not to be so ugly. You know, it's because there's that ugly, dark side. And I know that the planet's violent. And I know that nature can be violent. But in that is the beauty. We just don't need all that. We don't need to take more than we require.
Very true.
We don't need to indulge ourselves. It's wonderful to have amenities, but we don't need to go that far.
We need to find the balance again, and we need to find sustainability again. We had it for tens of thousands of years because we were forced to. We didn't have the ability to go out beyond our means. But now we've advanced to a point where we need to learn that ethical responsibility of how to coexist. And it is through that coexistence that we will find
divinity.
Divinity and salvation. just very well put. Very well put.
See, salvation, that's another kind of biblical word, don't you think?
Well, the concept of salvation existed prior to you know, Christianity or even Judaism. Being saved was, you know, salvation for people that are trapped on the roof of a flooded town, you know, the roof of their home, you know, it can mean a lot of different things depending on context. But I do think that I do hope for humanity to earn all of the pain and suffering that our generation and previous generations going back throughout time have fought for. What are we all doing if not trying to make the world a bit better each time?
Exactly.
You know, there is this life and no other. So let's focus on making it a good one so that our next successive lives through this reincarnation, if it's linear, are going to be better and better and better. Mm-hmm. So really it's selfish, I guess, after all. So.
Oh, it should be. It should be, you know.
Yeah.
And in that is what I see as, again, I'm going back to the word of the night, That's the divine experience.
Yep.
You know, and the mystery of it all. See, I don't think I came to terms with and made peace with the idea that I'm not going to figure it out in this lifetime. And I'm good with that. You know? It's like there's some things that are going to be a mystery and I don't know. And I'm okay.
Well, and you know, one of my favorite quotes, and this will be the last thing I'll rant about before we can move on, but one of my favorite quotes is a quote from Einstein. The mysterious is one of the most beautiful things that we can experience. And I love that. There is mystery and wonder. And there is the fact that we do not know so much, that there's so much to discover is exciting. And that's why I've often said, if our soul, the essence of what we are, the user of this brain and software of, you know, learning throughout time, if that soul exists in an abstract realm that's non-linear, it would almost be a theme park ride to go through a linear existence where you didn't know, where you got to exist, where there could still be mystery. What a wondrous thing. So it's all based on perspective. I know grass is always greener on the other side, but there's only this life to live, no other. Let's make it a good one.
You know, something I thought of, Michael, I'd like to do a program in the future about the laws of responsibility.
Oh, yeah.
I would. And how even in our daily lives.
Add that to the list right now.
Sorry?
Add that to the list right now.
Okay. Because even it's even in the smallest of things, because, and you really, it tweaked on me when you said about we all want to be saved, you know, that notion of salvation, and how we do very often look for help, and that's not a bad thing, people, don't get me wrong, you need support, you get the support, but how we absolve ourselves of responsibility, and right from women thinking a man should take care of this, or men thinking women should take care of that. Mm-hmm. And we relinquish a certain self-responsibility. And I really like to reference, you know, the Dr. Kelly's material about don't do for others what you can should do for yourself, or themselves, and vice versa. And, you know, and to talk about that. And yet how humanity, in light of our conversation, has this tendency to always want to be saved from itself.
Yeah, true enough. Absolutely. I will point out that when I say that I think that a certain level of social evolution will be our salvation, I don't mean that necessarily that we're going to be saved by anyone. I mean more that we're not going to kill ourselves, which we're going to kind of save ourselves, hopefully. That's that's the hope, and I think that we're just going to inch towards it, crawl towards it as much as we can, because what other choice do we have? But anyway, on to the next segment of our evening, Dr. Hunter.
Yes, and we're going to choose cards. And for those who are listening in the archives, we have the Inner Oracle Self-Discovery cards. Michael is going to pull one, and I pull a support card from the tarot deck. So, you know, and little messages for people.
I always like to see the pairing, too, you know, to tell the larger story, as it were. So we have Jamil up first.
All right.
And let's see what we have. Going to do a little shuffling. Going to do a little talking so we don't have dead air. And, oh, good. Wild card number 9, blank.
Oh, man, that's my favorite.
All right. Drawing this card puts you on notice to dig deep within for the answers you seek. This card is what you want it to be. It is what you need it to be. And it is all that you desire it to be. Remember that the unconscious mind speaks to you in the quietest of voices and in the loudest of ways, often overlooked. The universe is always on your side. Dig deep, for your answers lay within.
You know what I appreciate so much about that card, and yet it's kind of scary when you think about it? It's complete and utter responsibility. Self-responsibility. You can create whatever you want. And in support of that, Jamil, I got the 9 of Hearts, which is abundance. So, I mean, this replenishment, sitting in a place of abundance. And so I think what this is saying is you are at this, like, turning the page, so to speak, in yourself. It's like a bridge, crossing a bridge. And sometimes crossing a bridge is a little scary. It can feel that way, but you've got this. You can see the other side, and you're regenerating your energy and making, like, setting new goals for yourself, or finding out things you're interested in that you didn't know before. And that's part of the replenishment. So, you know, I find that very exciting. That's an affirmation to you.
All right.
Awesome.
And we have Dr. Jeff. So glad
to
have you.
Sorry, you were saying that too. Glad to have you.
Glad to have you. So, Jeff, I have number 12, Spirit, Cosmos, and Divine Energy. I think we pulled this one last week too.
We did.
Drawing this card indicates the evolving relationship you have with your own inner spirit or higher self within the context of the greater universe. You are growing your relationship with the cosmic consciousness. Continue to observe and appreciate the interconnectedness of all life forms within the fabric of life and the important role you and they play.
Well, Jeff, I got two cards that came out, so I'm going to go with it. First one is the Two of Spades, and the next is the Eight of Clubs. Now, in language lingo, in the tarot lingo, Two of Swords and the Eight of Wands. And what I'm seeing here, this is just my impression of that following Spirit, Cosmos, and Divine Energy, is it might be a fork in the road in some ways for you. And the energy is moving very fast. And you might feel that at times, like, oh, okay, when do I get on the escalator kind of thing. And I'm going to suggest that you just take a breath and follow your intuition and kind of finding your true path, what it is that you desire to be, not necessarily what's expected of you in a way, or even what you might expect of yourself to be more, better, greater, because you already are. So it's just making some decisions is what I'm going to go with on here. But the energy is moving really quickly. So, I know, yeah, look, I have watched my share of Netflix this past year or so, trust me. But sometimes it's time to turn it off and say, I got to do something else.
Oh, come on now. Don't feel too bad. I've watched my share and your share.
Yeah, well, I hope that makes sense to you, Jeff. I'm excited for you. It's just, you know, we each have our moments of saying, now, what is this? Okay.
Mm-hmm. So. Good message.
Edward is next.
All right, Dr. Edward, let's see what we got this week. Number 23, meaning and purpose.
I like it.
Let's see. The meaning of life is built upon values and beliefs and remains constant. The purpose of life is the action plan for the meaning of life. The purpose can change. A sense of purpose always evolves. The question is not, what is the purpose of life? Rather, it is, what is the purpose of my life? True fulfillment comes when embracing your heart's desire with both meaning and a renewed sense of purpose to fulfill that meaning. This card can also relate to the meaning or purpose of a specific situation, or lack thereof.
Well, in support of that is the King of Swords. So, and it, you know, comparable to a regular deck of playing cards in the Minor Arcana, that's the King of Spades. And the King of Spades, to me, is someone who is assertive. There's the strength that's in there, that the self-knowing, as long as he's not overbearing in a way. But when it comes to meaning and purpose, and I'm relating it that way here for you, Edward, is kind of sorting some things out for yourself, a matter of priorities, and what can you take forward? What do you want to do? So that King of Spades being an active energy, it wants to do stuff. He wants to feel like he's valued. Then what's next for you? What's the next adventure? What's the next kind of challenge? Or do you want to take another course? Do you want to, you know, find something you want to teach and share with others? It's what's the next challenge. So I think that's what the question here is for you. So
very exciting.
Yeah.
Always exciting to turn the page.
Yeah.
All right.
We have Dr. Shirley. Nice to see you here, Shirley.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you. And Dr. Shirley, I pulled number 8, Balance and Order.
Good one.
Let's see. With this card, balance and order in life or in a specific area is present where it needs to be. If experiencing adversity, look for what is out of its proper order. Adversity is a state of disorder. Once that order is restored, adversity fades. Moreover, self-completeness and success will ensue once order and balance are restored to the life leadership paragon areas of self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will.
I got the High Priestess for you, Shirley. That's powerful. So with balance and order, High Priestess. Now, I think the message here might be combining or knowing how to enact intuition. I think you can have a feeling about things, you can know about stuff or have a sense about things, but what's the doing of that? So, and then what information you're getting, what is supposed to be enacted, if you will. So I'm feeling like you're regaining or gaining a sense of balance in yourself, and this is a turning point between that intuitive, sensitive side to yourself and the one that's also opening up into, oh, I didn't know I could do that. You know, the kind of experience, which is always exciting. But you have to get to know yourself again. Well, it's kind of like being able, waking up one morning and saying, oh, I can read clouds. Well, what does that mean to your life now? And then you've changed as a result of that. So it's maintaining a balance and a sense of order in thinking and in daily life. So the High Priestess is, in my world, it doesn't get any higher than that when you're attempting to master some form of the divine arts. See, I use the word divine, Michael. So you're mastering something, but you're also using your intuition. So we have to keep it grounded. I guess that's my point, Shirley. So you're getting it, and something is coming together for you. And I want to say thanks very much for all the feedback in the chat room for some of the cards we've been pulling, Michael. Jeff has responded. Edward's responded.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that positive feedback. And thanks, Jeff, for reminding us all that we're coming up to the summer solstice. And that's
the worst solstice of them all. I'm just not a fan of Florida summers, don't mind me.
Well, it's the 16th, it's next week. So we have that's another shift or change. It's the longest day in the northern hemisphere. Mm-hmm. So it's an exciting time. So we're changing energies. And
and realistically it's a time of light, the longest day.
Yeah. It is so, and I love this time of year before it gets too hot where I live. And speaking of heat, the great drought, and oh my God, heat wave across the eastern U.S. and some other places on the planet, it's kind of crazy. My daughter in Sedona said at 8 o'clock this morning it was 37 Celsius, and in Phoenix it was 48. yesterday or something. Like, that's brutal.
That is brutal. That's like, melt your tires,
Yeah.
Brutal.
Yeah. That's like 120, 125 degrees. It's getting up there.
But it's a dry heat, just like an oven. Although, that being said, I have, been in the, I guess, what is that desert out that way? The Sierra Nevada? Does that encompass, Nevada and all of the, Utah?
Yeah, north of Arizona, yeah.
Yeah.
It gets really hot there.
I've been there in July, actually. It got into the hundreds, easily 110.
Yeah.
It was a dry heat. I would take that any day over a humid, steamy, just grody, sticky day. But, again, I digress. it's been fun.
It's been a good discussion.
It has been.
You know, it, it, really, there's so many things we learn about it. Like, what is divine? What does that mean? But our use of language and the responsibility to language and, you know, what we're, you know, trying to ascertain from all the little seeds that have been planted in our minds about what things are supposed to mean when they may not at all.
Yeah.
That's the way I see that, so.
Well, I might even say that this conversation has been divine. And I as always, appreciate it. I do appreciate the chance to, you know, come together with you. And I say it every week, and I mean it. It comes from the heart. It's a high point. And I think I believe you stated it as the power of responsibility. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. The power of responsibility. That's a good one.
So we're going to be talking about that next week. Sounds good. I'm looking forward to exploring that and the power of responsibility and, you know, kind of, you know, taking ownership.
Mm-hmm.
It is powerful, immensely powerful. So very much looking forward to that discussion. Looking forward to the solstice, even though I do joke about summer in Florida. Of course, there are a lot of wonderful things about summer. It's, you know, it has its own energy, its own spirit, just like you were saying earlier, its own vibe. So, always love to have you joining us live, and thankful to those that catch up with us in the archives. And any last thoughts, Dr. Hunter, before we wrap up?
No, I would just say everybody take care out there.
Yeah,
you
take
know,
care.
Take care and keep your little white lights around yourself, connect with good people, put a smile on your face every day and be thankful.
Absolutely.
Because it's crazy out there.
It is. It's a crazy, kind of messed up world, even in this wonderful bubble we live in, in the West. But, you know, live this life to the best that you can. Enjoy every day. And looking forward to seeing you next week. Until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.